This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Now that the thaw is underway, perhaps Metro Atlanta and the state can sit back and think a little bit about how we got to the traffic nightmare that ensued after the snow started falling. Rebecca Burns of Atlanta Magazine, where she is a deputy editor, has written an article in Politico which puts some of the pieces together. And these are pieces that don't just start on Tuesday. They go back a long way in the city's history, and she argues came together to produce this problem and a longer-range problem for the region. Rebecca Burns, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
You talk about four key points that are part of Atlanta's recent history, if you talk about recent going back some decades. Atlanta is a city surrounded by a region where a lot of people live who then come into the city and commute. Second, our car-dependent history and really lack of a manageable transit system that serves the whole region. And finally, more recently, the defeat of the transportation local option sales tax, often called T-SPLOST. But there are other cities, aren't there, that have histories similar to this? So is Atlanta unique in any way here, in a way that produced what happened on Tuesday?
Well, Atlanta is unique in that although there are other cities with these kinds of history, Atlanta uniquely has this combination of sprawl, where one of, if not the lowest, one of the lowest density population metro areas in the country. We're the ninth largest metro area in the country, so there are a lot more people here to get into these kinds of traffic jams. And we just have this history of balkanization that goes back over decades. So as we see, communication among the various jurisdictions wasn't very clear.
And
I'm not saying this couldn't happen in Houston or another kind of sprawling Sun Belt city, but I think for Atlanta it is, if you pardon the expression, kind of the perfect storm scenario.
Yeah, you mentioned Houston. I was thinking of Dallas, which is another great big city and which has, if possible, at least when it comes to zoning and things like that, even fewer regulations than Atlanta does.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I can speculate and talk too much about Dallas. I don't know much about that. I know a little bit or some about Atlanta. But I do think that we just have this situation of congestion, such a car-dependent culture, and sprawl, which all kind of convened for this situation to happen.
You mentioned the T-SPLOST also, and it certainly could be argued, okay, the T-SPLOST is part of a long-range approach, and if it was rejected, those who supported it said we missed a chance. But the T-SPLOST being a long-range approach certainly wouldn't have done anything to prevent what happened on Tuesday, though, would it?
No, but that part of the point of the story and the assignment that Politico had asked me to tackle was explaining for the national audience who was watching us and finding it comical that we were not able to handle 2 inches of snow and kind of putting that context in there. So just talking about not only do we have a history of rejecting transit solutions and kind of a regional approach to this, that in very recent times we've kind of exerted that same thing. So back in the 60s and 70s, we rejected MARTA expansion across suburban counties, were very driven on highway construction, and then back in 2012, the same thing in a different version, but a kind of a repeat of that shows up.
You mentioned the MARTA votes of the past, and you mentioned in the article that race was a part of that, and you've also written some books on Atlanta's history. To what extent do you think, or would you argue, that race is a part of our transportation structure or lack of it?
It's a huge part of it when you look at the historical context. So when you look at the rejection of MARTA into suburban counties in the 60s and 70s, that fell across racial lines. Those counties were very different than they are today, and there definitely was a concern about people from Atlanta, which was code for people of color, coming up to the suburbs. So that was part of the historical context. And basically, if you look at the history of Atlanta, whether it's the past half a century or going back to the 1800s, or looking at what's happening today, what I have found is every single story I do around Atlanta, it always ends up being around three themes, which is race, class, and transportation. No matter what I've written about, if I write about Turner Field, I'm working on a story now about access to food and food deserts, those themes just recur over and over again. So that's kind of in the DNA of the metro area. We're making strides, and I'm not by any means trying to suggest that things are the same now as they were in the 60s and 70s, but it definitely is a component of what goes into us acting regionally or not regionally.
There's also a local government emphasis here that seems to come up, in the idea that government is best which governs least, a long tradition in American politics. That is perhaps part of the reason why we have so many smaller jurisdictions, and perhaps leads to the lack of communication. How is it possible for a region like this to say, okay, we're going to communicate across these lines while preserving them?
Well, I think it just takes a real concerted effort to make sure that communication is important and can happen. You can communicate across all kinds of barriers as long as it's a priority for you, but it's just something that has not been done. And it does take leadership by those people within the metro area who have significant positions. So again, Mayor Reed, Governor Deal, but also the county CEOs, there are people of great influence who just need to make this a priority.
There are some bills in the legislature that would allow kind of what you might call mini T-SPLOS, sort of smaller versions of that big regional vote that we had a year or so ago that was defeated and that you talked about. Maybe a couple of counties putting things together. Do you think that what happened on Tuesday, and perhaps even analysis like yours and others, will push those along?
I certainly hope so. We have a very bad history in Atlanta, and I'm sure this happens everywhere, there's a crisis, everyone freaks out, and then things get back to normal, and we kind of forget about it until the next crisis comes along. So if you look at the weather forecast, the weather is supposed to be back into the 50s, maybe the 60s this weekend. It's going to be another beautiful Atlanta January, February like we're used to. So I hope that people remember this and think about it as we think about planning for the long term.
Coming back to the intent of the article, which was to address a national audience in addition to the one here in Atlanta, do you think that the rest of the country will look at what happened here and perhaps see a little bit of themselves? Or will they look at it and say, okay, we understand the problem better, but Atlanta is still sort of uniquely dysfunctional?
I think that it really just depends on what part of the country and what metro areas the readers are coming from. I've certainly heard from media outlets in places like Houston who see a lot of parallels from this and think that the piece has applications for their audience. And I think there are other places where it's just a different power structure and it helps them understand Atlanta. I mean, the point when they initially asked me to write the piece, it was like, can you explain to the rest of the country how come the mayor hasn't come in and taken control of this and what's happened to the city of 6 million? And it's like, well, that's where you need to explain. It's not the way you perceive it from the outside. He's the mayor of the major city at the heart of metro Atlanta, but it's only 10% of the population and a fraction of the landmass. It's a very different scenario than the way, say, a Mayor Bloomberg or in other cities can come in and take control.
But we do have an organization set up which is supposed to enable the kind of communication that you've talked about. There's the Atlanta Regional Commission. It has no governmental authority, but it supposedly is able to put forward regional solutions and get unified support behind it.
Well, certainly it can, but I think you raised yourself the key fact to it. It has no authority. So the Regional Commission can make recommendations, and they've made very good recommendations and astute recommendations. They may have made some recommendations some of us don't support, but you can recommend, but other people have to implement and act on that. So they are hamstrung in a way that it's constructed. So again, it takes unifying across the region. So I hope that we can kind of learn from this and not just also put the blame on the elected officials, but on us as citizens and voters, thinking through what are we going to support and who are we going to elect into office and what leaders are we going to put our support behind to ensure that we start thinking in a more cohesive way.
In a lot of the debates in the legislature that I've covered over transit, one of the arguments of, let's say, opponents of expanding MARTA, one of the arguments that they have long advanced is transit is not a magic bullet. It is not going to get people out of their cars automatically. Is that something that you hear as well?
I mean, I certainly hear that, and there are all kinds of arguments about transit, but the fact is transit does work. We've seen transit work. We've seen a new generation of younger people moving to the city who don't want to have cars. A couple years ago, again, talking to our very short-term memory, when gas was over $4 a gallon, a whole lot of people suddenly took MARTA and embraced transit and liked transit. So part of it takes a mind shift, but it is something that is part of the solution. I'm not saying by any means that only expanding MARTA will solve all of these kinds of problems, but really having a cohesive strategy where we can connect different regional transit systems, where we can get our focus away from a million people going onto one highway system, which is basically what happened on Tuesday, and that's why it came into gridlock.
Another problem going back into history for transit now is that back at the time, let's say, MARTA was being put together and in its early years, there was a lot more federal money available to put regional transit together. That's not the case now.
That you're absolutely right about that, but there's less federal money for all kinds of infrastructure and support. So I don't think that's a very fair argument. I mean, it's a valid point, but we can't just like use that as an excuse not to invest.
But then where will the money come from?
Well, the money has to come from us taxing ourselves and coming up with that, which we may not want to do, but I don't think we want to be in a situation where we're paralyzed by gridlock. The thing for me that was really alarming is you had this entire region paralyzed by 2 inches of snow, and I'm not by any means underplaying the terrible experience people went through trapped in their cars for so many hours, or kids trapped in buses, or a woman giving birth on the freeway. But what if this had been an even more serious event that happened, and again, we had a million people trying to get on the highway at the same time? It could have been much worse.
We had that kind of self-examination after 9/11. I remember doing stories about it, going down to places in South Georgia where there are evacuation routes for hurricanes and so forth. But it seems as if, as you mentioned before, we've forgotten that.
Yeah, I mean, so part of what we need to do is kind of draw on this experience and keep it in our memory. And I'm hoping that people who run for office in the future and people who make policy decisions and those of us who go to the polls remember this. And it's hard to make people remember. As you said, you would think we would remember post 9/11 how we felt. But there just has to be a will around this. This was, I think, something that affected so many people on such a level and was so intense, and we were held up to such national scrutiny. And one thing that is in Atlanta's DNA as well is we're a very self-conscious metro area. We care a lot about what the other parts of the country say of us or think about us. So there will be some kind of reaction in that way.
It's only been a few days, but there's been a lot of reaction on social media to this article. Have you gotten anything in particular in the way of feedback that struck you?
It really is surprising to me how viral the reaction to the story has been. I checked in today with the editor at Politico who assigned it, and he told me that this story has generated more Facebook shares than any other story Politico has ever published, which was kind of surprising to me, and that about half of that has come from people within Metro Atlanta. So I think that the response from readers was wanting to share it with people outside of Atlanta as an explanation of kind of here's the larger picture of what happened. Like, we all concede we can't drive on snow, but this was not a matter of a bunch of Southerners being morons and not able to drive on snow and ice, but it really was this issue of gridlock and congestion. So I think people in Atlanta in particular responded to the fact that it put this into context that people from the rest of the world in the country could understand when they're looking at us.
It is kind of ironic, though, to say if indeed that's why they were sharing it, that they were saying, hey, you know, it's not just that we have this problem, we have all these other ones.
I guess, but maybe people were just very self-conscious about being treated like idiots who can't drive on snow. I don't know if you saw The Daily Show last night, but certainly it doesn't make us look very good. I concede I cannot drive in the snow. I got stuck on a hill, and these wonderful, wonderful Atlanta Police Department officers helped me get up Harris Street. So thank you very much. But it's more that this was not just the problem.
Rebecca Burns is deputy editor of Atlanta Magazine, author of 3 books on Atlanta history, and her article is in Politico magazine. Rebecca Burns, thanks very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, and I'll talk to you soon.